It's all new. It's all fresh. It's all brand spanking new. How new is it? In case you haven't got the word, this is a quote from Larry Gatlin, country performer. Oddly enough, in Washington last night for one of the inaugural balls. Quote, quoting Larry Gatlin, in France, it was Joan of Arc. In the Crimea, it was Florence Nightingale. In the Deep South, there was Rosa Parks. In India, there was Mother Teresa. And in Florida, there was Catherine Harris. Unquote, Larry Gatlin. Catherine Harris, the Secretary of State who started the thing. You know, ladies and gentlemen, it ain't over yet. They're still counting, and early returns published in the Palm Beach Post indicate that Al Gore did not enjoy the big spike in votes in Dade County that everybody expected him to. But we'll have to wait for the official Miami Herald count before we really know the degree of illegitimacy. Or not. I'm just, you know, hey, these elections are, sometimes they take a while. What is this, Russia? We should know right away. I think it's interesting to note for everybody who believes in the myth of the liberal media, how the news media fell over themselves this weekend to celebrate the transfer of power. If there really were a liberal media in this country, and I'm not saying there should be, but if there really were a liberal media, somebody, there would have been, you know, one of the coverages would have been grand theft, presidency continues. You know, just to balance things out, because everybody was, oh, it's magical, it's mystical, it's marvelous, it's snowing, let's get inside, please, quick. You know, it's just a thing, they do. Now it's the new guy. They'll celebrate Texas for a while, and then they'll get tired of it the way they did when LBJ was in town. It just goes round. But if you do want to criticize the media, and one does, there's a much more legitimate target, and it would go something like this. Where is Steve Peace? How come none of the media, especially located in California, is digging up Steve Peace? Who's Steve Peace? Steve Peace is the assemblyman. I think he's a former assemblyman. I think he was term limited out of office. So maybe he's not listed anymore. Who knows? Who wrote the piece of legislation that decreed the deregulation of the electric power industry in California. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. He's the author of the crisis. One man can be found with his signature on the crisis in California. Ow. Lack of publicity. Steve Peace is his name, and yet you're not seeing him dug up and grilled. Mr. Peace, what were you thinking exactly when you, what was going through your mind? What did you think about the dairy industry not being able to lug milk around and the semiconductor? What did you ever? Nobody. Not happening. So, liberal or conservative, they're here, ladies and gentlemen, here's the party line from this broadcast. It's not liberal media. It's not conservative media. It's just lazy media. Hello, welcome to the show.
You say you're not from Texas. Man, as if I couldn't tell. Well, you think you pull your boots on right and wear your hat so well. So pardon me, my laughter, as I sure do understand. Even Moses got excited when he saw the promised land. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyways. I was born and raised in Texas, and it means so much to me. And though my girl comes from down in Georgia, we were up in Tennessee. And as we were down the highway. She asked me, baby, what's so great? How come you're always going on about your long stars? I said, that's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. All the road, it looks so lovely. She stood there on the side, and she grew smaller in my mirror as I watched her wave goodbye. Champ still on the guitar. Uncle Wally's at home with Heidi, Heidi in her loving arms. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway.
Thank you.
Won't you give to your public radio station so we can get the other channel back?
Let me give you some good advice. Don't get caught in the same trap twice. Every little thing you do, Big Brother is watching you. Don't put your business on the telephone. Well known. It could be your Waterloo. Big Brother is watching you. Tell nobody when you're having fun. Easy walk, don't run. Careful who you're talking to. Big Brother is watching you. Nothing bad about a CEO. When the money whistles, do-si-do. I only tell you 'cause it's true. Big Brother is watching you.
Hey, what did we promise you, Stereo? Look at the paperwork, ladies and gentlemen. You'll see it nowhere there. We didn't promise you two channels, even. We promised you Mittened Audio. Thanks. Our crisis here in Southern California. I blame Inc. on the power crisis, even though it's just our incompetence here. Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Harry Shearer from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. Things could be worse, department. A new law on the National Common Language went into effect January 1 in China. Why do they celebrate our New Year? Why do they put the law into effect January 1st, like that means anything to them? Well, they did. It promotes the standard Beijing form of Mandarin Chinese. The law bans television and radio announcers from using dialects, accents, or other forms of non-standard Mandarin. Man, Goodbye, John Madden. Goodbye, Joy Behar. I mean, just a list. I just started. It bans dialects, accents. Well, Jesse Jackson did have a television show, that's true. And makes grammatical errors in billboards a criminal offense. Well, see, there's something good in everything. Grammatical errors in billboards are a criminal offense. But you have to go to China. So, you know, it might be worth it. Because the ducks are good. Ladies and gentlemen, in the before you get too teary-eyed, I know some of you in the listening audience are feeling a little teary-eyed. Before you get too teary-eyed, joining the club of Now You Tell Me, in the Now You Tell Me department, is the Clinton head of the drug war, General Barry McCaffrey. Waits until he's leaving office to say in an interview to the New York Times, treatment for addiction and mental illness should be covered by the same health insurance that recognizes physical illness. He calls it silly for federal law to impose harsher penalties for selling or possessing crack cocaine than for powdered cocaine, because they are two forms of the same drug. He criticizes predetermined prison sentences for drug felons, like those set under New York's Rockefeller drug laws. I am unalterably opposed to the system of mandatory minimums, he said. I think we need to give this authority back to the judges. And most nonviolent addicts behind bars, he says, belong in treatment centers, not in prison. He's been in office for 5 years, ladies and gentlemen. Waits until January of 2001 to say that, to say those things. Thanks, General McCaffrey. I think your watch is waiting for you. On your way out. It's interesting what people say when they're about to leave the government, isn't it? When they can't do anything and you can't hurt them anymore. It is something to be believed. Here is such good news, ladies and gentlemen. I can't hold it back any longer. This is from an Australian newspaper. Adding vitamin B1 to alcoholic drinks may greatly reduce the incidence of alcohol-related brain injury.
We can drink as much as we want and not lose any weight.
The research, to be published in the journal Alcoholism, Clinical and Experimental Research, finds a significant relationship between vitamin B1 and the working memory performance of subjects. Research leader Dr. Maggie Ambrose says adding vitamin B1 to alcoholic drinks could provide a cost-effective preventive measure against alcohol-related brain injury. The cost to add the vitamin to 6,000 bottles of alcohol would be about 20 cents. Night Train, now vitamin fortified. The study involved 107 subjects detoxifying from alcohol addiction. All were about the same age, had similar alcohol consumption habits, and had been drinking for the same number of years. Sound like good friends. They were given differing levels of intramuscular vitamin B1 injections for 2 days, and then given working memory tests. The group which received the highest dose of the vitamin put in the best performance. Dr. Ambrose said, although the vitamin B1 was injected, not drunk, the benefits were clear. Adding vitamin B1 to alcoholic beverages and treating all detoxifying people with vitamin B1 promised to be more effective in reducing the incidence of alcohol-related brain injury. In 1992, the Australian government ordered vitamin B1 to be added to bread flour, but that this treatment would be better targeting those at risk. The brewers had no comment. They didn't understand the report. No, it's just they didn't have a comment. You don't have to have a comment right away, necessarily. Ladies and gentlemen, do you? Among the things we need to worry about, again, is this clotting on airplanes. Now, I'm thinking about it because I'm about to get on an airplane, and I think I'm flying coach. Alarming new evidence has emerged. In interesting how the British newspapers always manage to time the emergence of alarming evidence to coincide with their Sunday editions. It's just the way their media works. They like to have the alarming evidence emerge on Sunday because that's the big paper. So anyway, here's alarming new evidence emerging that at least 300 people a year could be dying from flight-related blood clots. If I'm a lawyer, I am so lining up to sue the airlines. I am so lining up. I am so filing. Even though the dangers of economy class syndrome became known 2 years ago, airlines have refused to act, says the British newspaper The Sunday Observer. Now fresh research to be published in the British Medical Journal reveals a tenth of blood clots treated at one London hospital were caused by sitting immobile on flights. If these figures were expanded to cover the nation, you know, extrapolated, it would point to 3,000 cases a year and 300 deaths, making death from a blood clot a greater risk than death in a plane crash, which is, of course, a negligible risk. The investigation has uncovered the first evidence that British pilots and aircrew have also been victims of DVT, deep vein thrombosis. Movie title? I don't think so. At least five have been affected, including two who developed potentially deadly pulmonary embolisms. It's the only ism for me, is embolism. The Civil Aviation Authority confirmed it did know of cases of pilots with blood clots, but declined to divulge any further information. One pilot writing on the Professional Pilots website said, "I can confirm that aircrew have in the past and still do suffer from DVT. I suffered a pulmonary embolism at the age of 37. Luckily, after 3 months off, I got my license back. Recently, a colleague suffered the same fate, and luckily he survived as I did." Yesterday, it emerged that the youngest ever chief executive of advertising agency giant J. Walter Thompson has taken early retirement after being stricken by flight-related DVT. He collapsed after stepping off a New York to Switzerland flight. Doctors told him he was lucky to survive. He couldn't have been flying coach. Chief executive of J. Walter Thompson? So it can happen in first class, too. Why are you calling it economy class syndrome? I guess we're just going to... If I'm what's his name? Jake? Body by Jake? What's his last name? Jake Stein? If I'm Jake, I'm lining up to have my video shown on airplanes. Come on, everybody, let's get out of the seats! Let's go! Let's get that blood moving! We don't want those clots! Because otherwise, yes, it is going to be dangerous for the folks in the airline business. All right, so something to nag at you. Bill Clinton, ladies and gentlemen, he's a friend of Barbara Streisand's, or she's an admirer of his, he's an admirer of her, and he certainly is doing the Streisand farewell tour. Just doesn't stop, just keeps, goodbye again, so long, no, this time, please, thank you, goodbye again, thank you again so much. Look, he loves the camera almost as much as the camera loves him. It is the most, I think, the most beautiful requited love affair any of us have seen in public in a long time. Bill Clinton and the camera. Why should it end? So he does a farewell speech in primetime Thursday night. He does a farewell radio address on Inauguration Day. He has a farewell rally at Andrews Air Force Base, a farewell rally on arrival at Kennedy Airport. And he pardons a lot of people after pulling an all-nighter his last night in the White House. Did you know that? Didn't sleep. Stayed up all night reviewing pardons and watching a movie with Hillary. Name of movie not disclosed. So, you know, because everybody's wondering, what's he going to do when he leaves office? Maybe he just will just keep doing this. I think, personally, he's going to show up at Sundance. Because I'm more independent now than either of the Weinstein brothers. Disney doesn't own me.
I've talked to your mother and I've talked to your dad. They say they've tried, but it's all in vain. I've begged and I've pleaded, I've even got mad. Now we must face it, you give me a pain. How can I miss you when you won't go away? Keep telling you day after day, but you won't listen, you always stay and stay. How can I miss you and you won't go away? Your never-ending presence really cramps my style. I dream that it won't always be the same. At first I was attracted, but after a while. Have you ever heard of the hard to get game? How can I miss you when you won't go away? I keep telling you day after day, you won't listen, you always stay and stay. How can I miss you when you won't go away? I mean it too. Must it be me? Oh, why won't you cut me loose? Just do me a favor and listen to my plea. I'm not the only chicken on the roost.
How can I miss you when you won't go away? Keep telling you day after day, but you won't listen. You always stay and stay.
How can I miss you when you won't go away?
That was fun.
Another game?
In a minute.
Problem?
Nope. I just have to take my Zydex.
Now there's a new pill you can take. And unlike medications that may have disappointed you in the past, this one will do everything we say it will. It's Zydex SE. The reason it's so effective is that you don't take it to cure anything.
I'll take 2,000 shares.
I'll take 3,000 shares.
Oops. Better take my Zydex.
Zydex SE is the first prescription medication scientifically designed to produce nothing but side effects. With Zydex SE, you don't have to wonder. You know what you're getting.
You ready to play?
Give me a few minutes.
Feeling okay?
I'm feeling my Zydex.
Zydex SE should not be taken by women during or before or after pregnancy. Side effects include but are not limited to drowsiness, numbness of hands and feet, dizziness, ringing of ears, shortness of breath, dry mouth, diarrhea, memory loss, shriveling of the pancreas, tremors, chills, sweats, irregular heartbeat, swelling of joints and mortification of tissues, slurred speech, persistent skin rash, alopecia, diminished sex drive, and mysterious organ failure.
Uh-oh, the stock went down.
It's okay. I'm feeling my Zydex.
Ask your doctor if Zydex SE is right for you. Then ask him what right means. For today's active lifestyles, proven results are what counts. And for maximum proven results, nothing comes close to Zydex SE. For nighttime use, try Zydex SE and some gin. Ask your doctor. Zydex, it doesn't cure anything. Except uncertainty. Ask your friggin' doctor.
Zydex, one of tomorrow's solutions today. From Prehensis, healthcare for the rest of us.
Pra sempre não, pra todos não, não quero ver nem mais sentir. Cabe a razão de cada um ter sua visão. Sem contenção, só na emoção, pra ser feliz sem resistir. De um puro não, pra explicar essa tua intenção. Mas sem contenção de emoção, sem contenção, sem contenção, sem contenção de emoção, sem contenção, sem contenção. Pra sempre não, pra todos não, não quero ver nem mais sentir. Cabe a razão de cada um ter sua visão. Só com a canção, sem coração, contendo o tempo sem sentir. Por ilusão, só viver de emoção, mas sem contenção de emoção, sem contenção, sem contenção, sem contenção de emoção, sem contenção. ter sua visão. Só com a canção, sem coração, mantendo o tempo sem sentir. Sendo uma pura ilusão, só viver de emoção. Mas sem contenção de emoção. Sem contenção, sem contenção. Sem contenção de emoção. Sem contenção, sem contenção. Para, 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 para.
This is the show, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm not using an accent or a dialect. Oh, let's wonder. Let's see how long it takes for the second channel to show up this time, shall we? What should I hit? There it is. Hit the board. Let's play Hit the Board, ladies and gentlemen. It's an old radio game. Come on. Hit your radio, and I'll hit the board at the same time. We'll see. There we go. Nah. Now we're back to nominal. Now we're back up to spec. And so it would be, then, meet for me to read the trades for you. Oh, a bunch of stuff to read here. First of all, I'm sure you saw this, but just in case you didn't. Yep. This week, the Kimberly-Clark Corporation announced its intention to retrain the nation to use wet toilet paper. Yes, it usually seems like an accident, but now it's a marketing device. Kimberly-Clark introduced a new form of wet wipes for adults, Cottonelle Fresh Roll Wipes. Roll wipe, of course, is one word. What do you think? You're living in China? Which hang from a dispenser above a family's dry toilet paper. Let's hope it doesn't drip. Last year, Americans bought $799 million in moist towelettes. But the leading moist towelette brands are all baby wipes. Kimberly-Clark is betting that adults are now ready to use them too. Peggy Nabefeld, come on, hit the board again. There you go. The marketing director for Cottonelle says that one out of four Americans already uses a moist tissue after they use the toilet. I wish I'd been running that marketing research. Kimberly-Clark spent $100 million. What am I, crazy? $100 million to develop the new product and will spend an additional $40 million to market it. Counting ads and installing roll wipes in health clubs and spas. I'm just going to sit here and pound the board all show. It's all right. Don't worry about me. Roll wipes will reach store shelves in the eastern states by next summer, says an analyst for J.P. Morgan Chase. You would not think of this as a category that they could do innovation. And here they are. They're swinging for a big one here. And quickly to another story before we lose the ability to broadcast completely. The Olympic Games remain a strong international brand for potential advertisers, but recent developments, ranging from over-commercialization to the publicized use of drugs by athletes, has tarnished the Olympics' once golden image, according to a new global consumer poll by McCann Erickson. McCann discovered the Olympics has two conflicting images. One symbolizes the high-minded universal ideals associated with the brand. The other represents contemporary troubles like drug and political scandals. and media coverage, which is often negative. These two brands appear to paradoxically coexist in the minds of most consumers, according to the summary of the report. While the brand, the Olympics, has been generally unaffected by the brand reality, drug scandals, commercialization, and the personal and political controversies, awareness of those issues and concern with them have not simply vanished. Says one official regarding the survey's findings, consumers were telling marketers and the media not to over-commercialize the events, but he says consumers were willing to accept commercialization if it was done appropriately. He pointed to Coca-Cola's Torch Run as an example. NBC is lopping off hundreds, thousands of employees, but they've still got enough left to go after a bigger piece of the home shopping action. The network has given a 13-episode commitment to On the Cover, a quiz show that will ask contestants trivia questions about popular culture. It plans a transactional element as a major part of the show, the sale of magazine subscriptions, as well as books, music CDs, movie DVDs, and other merchandise. In other words, NBC and the series creators of On the Cover think they have the electronic equivalent of the publisher's clearinghouse. One of the most intriguing things to NBC is being able to create a new business model where we can utilize our traditional and new media platforms for growing e-commerce revenue for the company, said an NBC executive who requested anonymity. During the show, contestants will see huge 25-foot screens displaying a blow-up of a magazine cover, as well as covers of CDs and books, according to one of the executives of the show. And then you'll be able to subscribe to the magazine or the book. The show is in final negotiations with a half dozen or more major publishers and media conglomerates on the e-commerce component of the game show. The key component of our show will always be about entertaining and challenging people's knowledge of pop culture, but we'll also offer them a convenient and easy way to buy a magazine, a book, or CD that has aroused their interest, the executive said. Monday and Sunday nights are being considered. Now, this isn't daytime. What do you think? This isn't China. There's been a bit of an internal battle as whether On the Cover should be an hour or half hour in format. But I have to think the longer format is easier to launch, said the NBC source. Well, I'm glad they're arguing about the important issues. Something reassuring when I read the trades for your copyrighted feature.
The guy who cared about love, and I'm not the guy who cared about fortunes and such. I never cared much. Oh, look at me now. I never knew the technique of kissing. I never knew the thrill I could get from your touch. Never knew much. Oh, look at me now. I'm a new man, better than Casanova at his best. With a new heart, brand new start. I'm so proud I'm busting my vest. So I'm the guy who turned out a lover. So I'm the guy who laughed at those blue diamond rings. One of those things, oh, look. look at me now. I'm not the guy who cared about love, and I'm not the guy who cared about fortunes and such. Never cared much. Oh, look at me now. And I never knew the technique of kissing. I never knew the thrill I could get from your touch. I never knew much. Oh, look at me now. I'm a new man, much better than Casanova at his very best. With a new heart and a brand new start. Why, I'm so proud I'm busting my vest. So I'm the guy who turned out a lover. Yes, I'm the guy who laughed at those blue diamond rings. One of those things. Oh, look at me now. Look at me now.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is All in All. All in All, CPR's regular skim beneath the surface of the news. I'm Milton Getzler in Washington. President Bush's choice for Interior Secretary Gail Norton had her confirmation hearings this week and generally impressed committee members with her forthrightness as well as her punctuality. One of the controversial policies she supports is letting companies accused of polluting the environment engage in so-called self-auditing, acting in effect as their own policemen. Ira Zipkin reports on what might come next.
Behind this unprepossessing storefront in Manhattan's Little Italy, you'd never think you'd find Michael the Hat Morello, long reputed to be the boss of one of New York's five organized crime families, so-called because there are five of them. So what is Michael Morello doing in the halls of Congress?
Ira, when we see law enforcement begin to give special treatment to one class of suspect, that is a threat to everyone's civil rights. So the National Organization of Alleged Perpetrators proliferated itself into the process because we feel that other classes of potential defendants deserve the same privileges as the polluters. And that's in no way a critique or a slam or anything else at the hardworking American businessmen trying to make an honest living, if you will, in the extractive or manufacturative industries. But self-auditing, self-policing, if you will, we feel is an idea whose time to come has gone and come again.
Michael the Hat registered as a lobbyist just this week. Already his organization, which represents a wide range of miscreants, some organized but many independent, has bought tables at five fundraising dinners in the Capitol. And Michael the Hat is always on message.
This is a fairness issue, pure and simple. As a matter of fact, we'd love to have the pollution companies come and join us in the alleged violation community and try to bring about equal treatment for all of our brothers and sisters in allegement. Self-policing for the polluters is like self-pollution for the police. Why isn't it good enough for everybody? And then at some point, I pull out my checkbook and we start talking policy because I am something of a wonk.
Business back in Little Italy will have to wait. Michael the Hat Morello is leading accused lawbreakers into the 21st century.
I mean, this is something that so many of our constituent groups have a stake in. Members of the hooker American community, narco-Americans, people in family businesses such as myself. I guess what you could say is we're the unpopular people who have to serve as the canary in the coal mine for the liberties of every American. But we believe we deserve a seat at the table. I believe we have a role to play. And in addition, I believe the restaurants in the nation's capital need much better linen service.
The NOAP hosts a Get Acquainted party for all new members of Congress later this week. In Washington, I'm Ira Zipkin.
This week, another story broke out of the tabloids and into the mainstream media.
the story of the so-called love child of the Reverend Jesse Jackson and one of his former staff members. But while some tabloid editors bask in the legitimacy of their reporting, others are trying to advance the story. Trip Coogan is the editor of the National Globe Post, and he's on the line with us from Coral Gables, Florida. Mr. Coogan,
yeah.
What's your headline story for next week?
Well, we're still working on the headline, but the story is Bill Clinton was Jesse Jackson's first love child.
You're serious?
We've got some very good sources for this story, Mr. Kitzler, and we're working them very hard right now. As soon as we get it totally nailed down, it goes on the Internet site, and I'm sure Matt Drudge will scoop us on our own story. At least I hope he will.
Mr. Coogan, just for starters, there's only about 6 or 7 years difference in the ages of the two gentlemen in question.
Well, for some of us in journalism, I guess we go a little bit farther than just believing somebody's press release about their age. If you just add 6 or 7 years to Reverend Jackson's supposed age, you'll find that by the standards of the state of Arkansas, he was old enough to have made this mistake for the first time.
All right, but Bill Clinton...
Well, there's always been some mystery about this father. I'm sure you've had this story on your air when a famous African-American called Bill Clinton our first black president.
Yes.
So something was apparent even then. Plus, how many white men play the saxophone? So, I mean, we're attacking it from many angles. This is true team coverage.
Have you had any comment from either the former president or Reverend Jackson?
Well, Reverend Jackson, as you know, is in seclusion, and we didn't want to do anything to disturb his privacy at this sensitive time in his life. And Mr. Clinton was probably unavailable for comment. But the minute we have a quote from either of them, obviously that will go immediately on our website.
Trip Coogan, thank you for speaking with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and just please give us a credit when you pick up the story.
And that is all this time for All in All. We had help this week from the John and Hilda Gaines Foundation for coverage of topics featured in other media. I'm Milton Getzler, inviting you back for more of All in All. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Thank you. page about a down-home family
Ladies and gentlemen, the digital wonderland continues to amaze and stupefy. This week, the Federal Communications Commission refused to accede to the requests of the broadcasters. The broadcasters were asking that cable companies be forced to carry both the analog and digital signals of the same stations. Dual coverage to encourage people to watch digital. Cable companies said, hey, we don't have enough channels for that. And the FCC agreed with them. Also this week, the broadcasters voted their support for the existing digital TV standard, the one that the Pentagon said is not robust enough, and the one that's not good enough for Europe. What do they know in Europe? You know what they watch on digital TV? Cheese. But here in the world of high-definition radio, it's time to say farewell for this edition of the show. The program returns next week at this AIM time, AIM stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like playing Hit the Board if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The mailing address, the email address for this broadcast is lemail@interworld.net. Lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L. Speaking over music almost as much as Ken Burns, this is Le Show. You know, Mother Teresa and Joan of Arc are dead, but Rosa Parks, ladies and gentlemen, can hear what Larry Gatlin had to say. Anyway, the show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the engineers who will come and fix the board, and the home of the homeless.